have a fantastic story. It comes from, and I'm using their nicknames, Octoxer, Kücherin, and Büzevug. You will pronounce this later, huh? And they do it one at a time. So actually, their operation is a fantastic story. And it's mainly one of the most sophisticated attacks chains, actually, and spyware ever discovered by Kaspersky. So give an applause, please.
So hello, everyone. My name is Boris Larin. Today I'm here with two of my colleagues. They are very young and very bright researchers. They still study in the university, and that's their first time doing presentation for such a large crowd. And today we're going to talk about the attack that was probably one of the most sophisticated that we ever seen. Just imagine that you discovered a zero-click attack on iPhones of your own colleagues, and you managed to capture all the stages of this attack. This is exactly what happened with us. So we call these attacks Operation Triangulation. It were attacks on iOS devices. It were targeted attacks. And they were discovered by Kaspersky at Kaspersky.
And against
Kaspersky. And today, so we're going to tell you the story of this sophisticated attack. We're going to tell you how we managed to capture all the stages of this attack. And also, we will give you a review of the whole attack chain. We will give you details of the remote code execution vulnerability, a pack bypass, a crazy kernel vulnerability, and just insane hardware vulnerability. And we also will give you a review of the actual spyware that was used in this attack. And without further ado, I give the word to Leonid, who will tell you how we found it.
Thank you, Boris. So the question that you might want to ask, how we managed to retrieve and analyze all chain links of this attack? And the answer is, while attackers behind Operation Triangulation were quite experienced, they made numerous mistakes. And we, in turn, did our best to benefit from their mistakes, thus fully analyze this malicious campaign. The story of this research starts with suspicious activity we detected in our network. We have a corporate Wi-Fi network dedicated for mobile devices. And one day, while monitoring its traffic with our CM solution, we found suspicious activity incoming from several iOS-based devices. And at the time, we had only a bunch of totally not suspicious domains. With some interesting facts we noticed about them. The first one, they are similar in name style, so two words and .com. They always were used in pairs. So as it turned out, the first one used during the exploitation process, it usually was a backup rabbit.com, and the second one was used for command and control server. Also, we observed high outbound traffic to these domains, and finally, the set of domains were registered with Namecheap and protected with Cloudflare. By observing the traffic incoming from infected devices, we were able to find a pattern that would help alert us about new infections. First, the device connected with iCloud server, downloading iMessage attachment. Then it performed a few requests to the first level exploitation framework server. As I already said, it was backuprabbit.com in most cases. And then it went off making regular connections with the second level command and control server. After we assumed that our employees' devices had been hacked, we had to get more information about the attack, in addition to malicious network activity. To do that, we decided to just running around the office and collect these devices for forensic procedures. And of course, at the time, we couldn't know what functions in this malware implements in this malware. So we had to carefully inform device owners about the infection and then make a backup of this device for further analysis. When we were checking these backups, we identified that while attackers during the exploitation did clean some artifacts and traces, but they failed to remove all of them. And that's as a result, we were able to shed a light on what was happening during infection. In this campaign, the attackers were really cared about stealth. They deleted all attachments with exploits. But what the fail was that they forgot to delete the folder where this IMS attachment was stored. And by checking logs created with a mobile verification toolkit, we can see SMS attachment folder is modified, but contains no files. Apart from deleting iMessage attachment, they removed a lot of evidence from different databases, for example, SMSDB and others. But again, they forgot about one of the most important databases for iOS forensics, is data usage. This database contains a lot of information about tracking applications and also process network usage. Upon examination of this database, we identified one strange process called backup agent, and it was making network connections at the same time we discovered accessing to suspicious domain in our network. Backup agent is a legitimate binary present in iOS, but it's deprecated since iOS 4. So, it shouldn't be making any network connection for this process. And it was the first our solid indicator of compromise in operation triangulation. It is data usage by process backup agent. At this step of investigation, we could determine that if the specific device is infected or not. But we were not able to retrieve any payloads. And we decided to set a trap to perform a man-in-the-middle attack. And they didn't detect it. To do that, we prepared a server with WireGuard and Meetum proxy, installed root certificates on the targeted devices, and just routed all traffic to the server. As a result, we got the opportunity to decrypt and read all the traffic. And for effective real-time monitoring, we also developed a Telegram bot, notified us about new infections. But what was the most important thing, that with Meetum proxy, we were able to modify all packets on the fly. This actually gave us unlimited power. First, without any patching, we got our first payload. It was an HTML page with obfuscated JavaScript code. This code performs various checks, and also it performs canvas fingerprinting. It renders yellow triangle, and then calculates its hash value. By the way, that's why we called this attack operation triangulation. But then we had to crack various layers of asymmetric cryptography in order to retrieve each next stage. The idea was to patch the stage on the fly, to move logic from it to our Meetum proxy add-on. And we did it with simply regular expressions. And we did it one by one, stage by stage, decrypting next stages. And finally, we implemented a Meetum proxy add-on that was 400 lines long. And it helped us to retrieve and decrypt a lot of fantastic stuff, including validators, exploits, spyware implant, and also additional modules. And finally, you can congratulate us. We get them all. My colleagues, Boris and Georgi, will tell you more about what we exactly managed to get.
So this attack, This attack, it started with a malicious attachment. This attachment, it was a PDF file, but the real exploit was inside. It was a true type font exploit. So probably most of you heard about TrueType. It's the most common format for fonts in the world. It was developed by Apple in 1991. Apple shared the code to Microsoft. It was included into Windows 3.1. And after that, Windows had a lot of vulnerabilities related to TrueType. So I think it's possible to say thanks to Apple. And this exploit, it was written in a TrueType WebAssembly language. So I read the documentation, started to develop IDAPRO model so I can reverse engineer it with quite comfort. And I also noticed that there were a lot of details missing from the documentation. And I've decided to check the actual code on the IO side that processes these TrueType fonts. And almost instantly, I found something strange. On IO side, there was one undocumented instruction that was not mentioned anywhere. I tried to look different documentations on Apple and Microsoft websites, tried to Google it on GitHub and everything, nothing. And like the only place where I was able to find one mentioning of it was the actions, ancient source code of Windows. And it's the only mention. So it says that it's an Apple-only not supported instruction, and it's a code from the early 90s. So we have one undocumented Apple-only instruction. Can you guess where the RC vulnerability is? So this instruction has such code that does some adjustments in two directions. And you can see that this code, it's almost the same. It's possible to assume that the developer just wrote one block of code and then just copy-pasted it. But so the only difference in these two blocks, but by doing so, the developer made a mistake, because here it should be endpoint minus one. Otherwise, it points outside of the working points buffer. And there is another buffer that contains offsets to other arrays. And if one of these offsets gets corrupted, attackers are able to corrupt more things in the memory, and this way get code execution. And the code of this TrueType VM parser is from the 90s, and it's exploited like most of the vulnerabilities from the 90s, web vulnerabilities, with interpreter and everything. So I will not be going into detail about its exploitation. But what is interesting and what I want to discuss is the way how Apple fixed this, timeline of the fix, because this instruction, it was there since the early 90s, and then it was silently removed in the January 2023. And we know that by that time, attackers already been exploiting this vulnerability. I don't know what actually happened there. I believe that suddenly Apple started to receive a large number of crash logs, and they suspected that something bad is happening because most likely this instruction was not used since the 90s. And they decided to remove it. It's good that they fixed this, but it's bad they didn't warn anyone about exploitation. And to exploit newer iPhones, attackers need additional vulnerability, a point ratification code bypass. So on newer iPhones, there are special instructions that used to sign and check pointers. And how it looks, there is a virtual address located in the lowest part of the pointer, and the higher bits of the pointer have a cryptographic signature. And attackers need to sign the pointers with the pack is instruction, which is basically like sign with default mode. And attackers use these weaknesses to bypass this. So firstly, there is too many different pointers signed by this default mode. And also, these pointers could be easily discovered in memory. So first you parse DLD cache, you get the address, lowest part of the address of functions that you want to execute, and then try to find it in memory and see if there is something in the upper builds. If there is some data and the lower parts of the address match, then you found what you were looking for. So here's the vulnerability and how it was exploited. So first they find the assigned pointer for function DLSim, which can be used to get signed pointers for any other function by its name. They get the signed pointer for mprotect function. They build a fake macho header with one export, and this export points to the usually not exported function signed pointer of the LD library. And then they build a loader object for this macho header and inject it into list of loaded images. And with that, they able to call DLSim for this fake macho header, and get the signed pointer for signed pointer function and sign any pointer with any key in modifier and completely bypass pack. And attackers use this to execute a ROP chain and a number of expressions. So in Objective-C, there is a special query language that called NS expressions and NS predicates. And they basically look like this. And it's possible to do whatever you want with this language. I believe it's possible to write a script that will convert your objective type C code into this format. So you can call any functions, you do, can do type conversion and everything. And most likely it's also possible to do this conversion fully automatically. And attackers execute a binary property list, which is basically used as a container for more expressions. And all these expressions are used to execute a next stage, a kernel exploit written in JavaScript. So on iOS, apps can run JavaScript, but without just-in-time compilation, and exploit makes the most of it. To get the maximum of capabilities, attackers modify the memory of JavaScript core library. They make it to have a very large amount of memory. They disable the garbage collection. And finally, they enable special debugging feature that is called $VM. With this debugging feature, it provides special functions that can be used from the inside of this script. And these functions can be used to get the addresses of the objects and also get read and write primitive. And this JavaScript exploit is the most complex exploit that I've ever seen in my life, especially if you're talking about JavaScript exploits. It was obfuscated to make it unreadable and to minimize its size, but still it had 11,000 lines of code after just simple reformatting it. And in this exploit, attackers are able to execute any API functions directly from the JavaScript. It's a technique that also popular among PlayStation 4, PlayStation Vita exploits, because there is also no just-in-time compilation, exactly like in this case. And to get this capability, attackers build a fake JS callback object and use it together with a chain of gadgets that allows them to execute any functions with any number of arguments. And right now, I want to talk about kernel vulnerability. It's extremely simple and powerful one. It relies on multiple integer overflows in the XNUS memory mapping syscalls. And it, for its exploitation, it doesn't require any memory corruption. So it's extremely easy to exploit. And it's extremely reliable. So we have such syscall. It's called match make memory entry. It's used to create a memory entry without mapping it. So you can provide some specific offset and size, and it creates memory entry for it. So it's a memory mapping syscall, a critical component of the operation system. That's why it's available in many different sandboxed processes. And this syscall, it has this check for offset and size. So offset and size here are input parameters, what means that it could be easily bypassed. And it allows attackers to create VM entry with of enormous size that is much larger than the size of original object. And it basically covers all the address space that's available here on the device. And then we have a VM map syscall, which is used to map some specific region of memory. And this syscall had this check, which will be also bypassed for such VM entry with such large size. So this gives attackers the ability to map the memory outside of the parent memory object. And if we combine this vulnerability with special parent memory object, it gives a capability to map all the physical space of the device. So here's a physical memory map of the iPhone. We have some region with memory mapped input-output registers. There is also DRAM, video RAM, volatile storage, and so on. It's just example. And in the RAM, we have a special memory mapped object there. It's called purple graphics mem, which is basically a frame buffer. And it could be used together with this vulnerability. It can be used, can be mapped to user level. So with this, attackers get the ability to map, read, and write all the physical memory of the device from and to user level. And the whole exploitation after it, it's just the reading of the memory. So reading and parsing of the memory. So attackers create a malicious mem entry for the purple graphics mem. Then they get its base because it may vary between different devices and firmware versions. And they need it so they can translate the real physical addresses to primitive addresses and use it. Then they find something that is called iBoot handoff. It's some special object that is located in the memory after iBoot. And it has a memory map, and attackers get a DRAM base from it. They also are able to get the physical addresses of the kernel and its size from special registers. It's possible to do not only for newer iPhones, but also for older ones. They find the CPU data structures for each CPU in DRAM, and also find the VM page array. And after that, they spawn a number of threads and get the kernel address of one of them from the CPU active thread field for CPU data structure. And they, after that, able to convert kernel address of the thread to its physical address. And because they have this physical mapping primitive, they're able to manipulate it and get the kernel read via thread get state. And what about kernel write? Attackers for each iOS version, they use different techniques, but it's also all about parsing the memory. And I think that the first vulnerability was nice. The kernel vulnerability was crazy, but this one is just insane. So you see, in my opinion, the life of an iOS attacker is quite miserable because you need to have a remote code execution, you need a pack bypass, you need a kernel vulnerability, and on other platforms, on that moment, it will be already game over. You can do whatever you want with the system. But here, you need to fight the final bosses, hardware-based memory protections. So it's either PPL that protects critical regions of the kernel memory. It also prevents attackers from injecting malicious code into user-level processes. KTRR, which protects the executable kernel code, and PAC, kernel PAC. So, but what if I told you that attackers actually are able to bypass all these very sophisticated, advanced hardware-based memory protections? And it makes life of attackers very happy. And all of this is done with another hardware feature that is present in the CPU of Apple devices. So there exists a hardware feature in newer Apple devices, in the system on chips. And it allows to bypass the hardware-based kernel memory protection, completely bypass it. And for it to work, you just need to write the destination address, write the data, and write the hash of the data to unknown memory mapped hardware registers that are not used by firmware. So Apple's system on chip, it's not just the CPU, but also a lot of different peripheral devices that are put together into one chip. They're just only a small number of them. And CPU works with them with special memory mapped hardware registers. So basically, it's registers of these hardware devices that are located at specific addresses in memory. And these addresses, they are stored in special device tree file. Here I provide an example how it looks like in this file. So exploit uses 6 unknown registers that I was not able to find anywhere. I checked different device trees for different devices, for different firmwares, and found nothing. I checked XNU source codes, the kernel images, kernel extensions, iBoot firmware, coprocessor firmware in search for any direct reference to these addresses, and also found nothing. Finally, I was able to find that Apple M1 and Apple M2 chips also have this hardware feature, and it mapped exactly to these addresses. So I tried, and it's there. And I used mini special tools that can be used to like trace all the accesses to specific regions of memory. And it also didn't report any usage. So like, how attackers are able to use some unknown, never before mentioned anywhere hardware registers that just unused by firmware? And what peripheral devices are used for exploitation? So I've got idea to check maybe what other regions of memory mapped registers located close to these unused ones. And quite soon, I found match. We have a GPU processor, and it has 2 regions of memory mapped registers, and they're located quite close to this that used by attackers. So it looks quite like this. We have 2 known registers of GPU regions for memory mapped registers of GPU processor, and then 1 region that is used by exploit located between them, And another block also located close to the first known region of GPU coprocessor. So it's quite likely that all this unknown functionality abused by attackers is related to the GPU's coprocessor. And I actually was able to prove it after that. So let's take a look on how these registers are used by exploit. So this one, it's kind of different from all the others. You can see that it's located in a separate block. It's touched only during initialization and finalization stage of exploit. And based on my experience, I knew that it either enables or disables this feature used by exploit, or just used for controlling the interrupts. And I've decided to move with this second theory, and quite soon, I was able to recognize this code. So on the right, you can see the code that works with the core-side debug registers of the Mind CPU. Mind CPU has multiple cores, and the addresses for these hardware registers are actually present in the device tree for this. And so what is core-side? It's a special hardware block that was developed by ARM, and it's also present in Apple processors. It has one special block that is called UTT. In external source codes, Apple says that it's their own proprietary stuff, but it's put into a core side block just for convenience. And this way, I was able to recognize that the code on the left actually works with the core side debug registers for GPU's coprocessor. So this way, I solved like half of the mystery. But up to this day, I still don't know what exactly located in this second block that is used by exploit. So we know this one register is used to hold and run the GPU's coprocessor. What about the others? These two are used for enabling and disabling this feature. Then this one is used only for Apple A15, A16 devices, and it's set to 1. And these two are the most interesting ones. This one is used for setting the flags and the lower half of the destination address. And this one is used for setting the data and also the hash of the data that is put together with the upper builds of destination address and also something that looks like a command. And this is how it all looks together. You can see that the data needs to be written in the aligned blocks of 64 bytes. And all this data should be written sequentially to this register, and also you need to write the hash and upper builds of the address also to this address. So what can be done with that? It's possible to patch the page table entries and modify the code, inject malicious code to the user level. It's possible to patch the protected data in PL data segment. So it's basically these two first. It's what is protected by PLL data hardware mitigation. And it's even possible to patch an executable code of the kernel. So basically, it bypasses all hardware-based kernel memory protections. But it's not possible to use this feature unless you know how to calculate a secret hash. And it's not a CRC. So if I not tell you this hash, you will not be able to verify anything from what I just said to you. So here it is. You can see that it's custom hash. It uses a predefined SBox table. And it's quite simple one. It occupies just 10 bits. It calculated twice, so in total, 20 bits. But still, if you don't know this algorithm, you will not be able to use this feature. And also, if you don't know how to write in what order, what values to some specific unknown memory addresses, you also will be not able to use this feature. So it's protected, like, best description for how it's protected, it's security to obscurity. Like, as long as no one knows about it, you're safe to have it in your CPU. So, currently, we don't know how attackers found out about this feature, what its original purpose, and was it developed by Apple or it's some third-party component like ARM's core site. Maybe Apple didn't even know that such thing exists in their processor. And actually, this vulnerability also is very similar to the one that I've discussed during a previous CCC in 2019. So back then, I gave a presentation about hacking Sony PlayStation Blu-ray drives using memory-mapped DMA registers. So back then, I was able to get a code execution because Sony was using these registers for all accesses for DRAM, and they were doing it in all the firmwares, but then they stopped to do that. And because they just started to access the DRAM directly by their absolute addresses, because DRAM was fully mapped into CPU address space. But I knew how to use this functionality. I saw it in early firmwares. So I just took advantage of it because nobody was also using it by the CPU. And the question, could have something like this happen in this case? To be honest, I don't know. Maybe there was some mistake. Maybe Apple made some external source code release and accidentally published something about that, and then they removed all information about it. Maybe something like that happened, but I don't know. And that's where I need the help from other iOS security researchers. So together we can probably solve this mystery. And I was really looking forward to learn how Apple fix this vulnerability, so I found how they mitigated this. So they have a special table that located in the device tree, and it actually contains the regions of the memory that are prevented from the mapping. And they have such format. You can see there is starting address, the size of this protected region, flags, and also tag name, which explains like what kind of the memories exist there. And all the entries that exist in this table, they're quite descriptive. So you can see the, what gets protected, EPCI. Then there is also device address resolution table that could be also used for bypassing these protections. Device address filter, system memory management unit, and so on. So to fix this vulnerability, to mitigate it, because it still will be present in these processors forever, because Apple removes it from newer revisions, Apple added two new entries, and they look like this. So the tag names not really descriptive, and it's actually quite different from all the other stuff that is located there. So quite crazy attack chain. And with that, attackers can do whatever they want with the system, like spawn processes, inject malware, patch anything in the memory, and so on. But attackers do something different. So they spawn two processes, imagined in Safari. They inject the payloads there. The payload in imagined just wipes the artifacts. And the payload that is injected to Safari does one simple thing. It just makes Safari to go to the provided web link. And that's where comes validator page. It's like what Leo showed you in the beginning, what we found in the first place. It verifies the victim, gets its fingerprint, and it's, if it's the right victim, it provides it another stage, which is a Safari exploit, and it was also a zero-day. After that, it executes a shellcode and another kernel exploit that's completely different from the first one. Only some parts of it are the same, but most of it code different. It also was massive in size. It had a lot of functionality. Some of its functionality was even not used because attackers forgot to strip unused functions. But yeah, it was totally different. And after that, attackers validate the victim once again to make sure that it's the exact victim they want to infect. And only after all of that, they provide the actual malware. So all this extra sophistication was completely unnecessary. But attackers did it to make sure that nobody ever knows what kind of malware comes at the last stage. So all of this just to protect this malware, so nobody will ever find out what comes at the last stage. And now my colleague Georgi will tell you all about it.
So, the malware which was deployed by this kernel exploit is truly fascinating. And for instance, let's take a look at this validator component right here. If you start reverse engineering it, you will immediately find out that it runs several actions. And curiously, the developers left the names of those actions in the code. And thanks to that, it is very simple to figure out what they do. If you look at this list right here, you will immediately recognize that this validator removes various logs and artifacts, as well as retrieves several information, like a list of network interfaces and installed applications. So, as for log deletion, the validator removes crash logs from specific processes. These processes can produce crash logs over the course of exploitation. And those processes belong to components such as iMessage, the web browser, and the malware itself. This is done in order to make sure that no forensic researcher can obtain those crash logs and guess how the exploit works. Apart from removing crash logs, they also clean up traces of the malicious iMessage that was used to send the whole exploit chain. To do that, they get a list of all received iMessages, and for every iMessage, they get the Apple ID of its sender. Then, they take an MD5 hash of this Apple ID, and they check it against a list of 40 MD5 hashes. If there is a match, this means that message has been sent by the attacker, and thus should be removed. And they do it in order to make it impossible to obtain the exploit attachment through backup analysis. Now, from an attacker's perspective, it was not very smart to include those 40 hashes into the validator's code, because provided you have enough time, you can crack those hashes and thus get a list of Apple IDs that are used by the attackers. That's exactly what we did. We managed to recover a vast majority of those email addresses, and we ended up thus doxing the attackers. Of course, we reported those emails to Apple so that they can investigate the activity in these accounts. Now, after performing log cleaning, the validator starts collecting information about the infected device. It checks whether the device is jailbroken. Its code is able to detect all the popular jailbreaks, like Pangu, Uncover, CheckRain, and many others. And in addition to that, it's also able to detect software which is commonly installed on jailbroken devices, like Cydia or Frida. And by the way, during the infection process, it also checks whether the exploits are run on Kerylium. So in case you didn't know, Kerylium is a platform that allows you to run iPhones in the cloud. It's commonly used for security research. So if it gets discovered that the exploits are launched inside Kerylium, then they will not work. And plus, the threat actor will get notified about that. And if you have been looking at the slides attentively, you may have noticed that apart from checking whether the device is jailbroken, well, there is also another action which is unused in the code. And it's called PSP detect. So since it's unused, we need to find out what this name PSP detect means. Now, whenever we think of the acronym PSP, what perhaps first comes to mind is PlayStation Portable, a gaming console which has been popular over the last decade. But why would you need to check for a PSP on iOS? Were the attackers checking whether the victim is a video game lover? However, if we look at the term PSP in the context of cybersecurity, well, it's used to designate personal security product, which is a fancy way of saying antivirus. However, there are no antivirus solutions on iOS. Still, there are security products that work on macOS. And thus, this action, which is not used on iOS, can be used to detect security solutions installed on macOS. And so, operation triangulation may also target macOS computers. This makes sense, because iOS and macOS share the same XNU kernel. And if you have an exploit which runs on iOS, it's not very difficult to adapt it to work on macOS. Now, after all those checks, the validator also collects a myriad of information about the infected device, such as the user's name, the Apple ID, the serial number, and a lot of other things. All this information gets sent to the C2 server, and it is used to assess whether the victim, the infected victim, is the correct one. And if all the checks are complete, if the victim is indeed intended, then attackers deploy the final payload, a sophisticated APT platform called TriangleDB. And when we looked at the code of this platform, we found out that it can be run on versions of iOS that are more than 10 years old. And this number should give you an idea of how long this code has been in use. And this platform, it is of course used for cyber espionage. It collects data through plugins that it downloads from the C2 server. And it is designed to steal almost every piece of information from your phone. It can access the microphone and the camera, the passwords stored in the keychain and the address book, the files you have on the system, as well as geolocation data. Apart from that, it requests permissions from the operating system to access a list of devices which are located in proximity to the infected phone. And we also observe TriangleDB to steal data from messengers such as WhatsApp, Telegram, and iMessage. The code of those plugins themselves is also very interesting. Take, for instance, the plugin that records the microphone. It writes output data in a custom format that uses both the encoded audio as well as it includes information about events that occurred during the recording process. And this module, this plugin, it records audio only when the victim screen is off. And this makes it very difficult to detect it with a naked eye. In addition to this, it sets a trap for forensic researchers. In case it discovers that somebody is reading event logs from the system, then it shuts down and informs attackers that the cover might have been blown. And I hope that by telling you all this information, well, that I've managed to convince you that attackers collect a lot of information from infected phones. But here's the question. Once they collect this information, how do they analyze it? They must be dealing with gigabytes, if not terabytes, of data. For example, when we travel at events such as the CCC, we take a lot of photos, like hundreds of photos a day. So, for example, in the case of photos, how do the attackers find out which photos are useful for them and which are not? And the answer to this question is actually machine learning. So we stumbled on a plugin that extracts metadata from saved photos using Apple's neural network engine. So let me show you how this works. So whenever you save a picture in the gallery, Apple's machine learning module starts analyzing it. For example, for this photo that you see right here, well, this engine managed to find out that it contains coconuts, beach, water, and straws. In addition to this, this engine can perform optical character recognition. It can detect text on photos. For example, in this picture, it managed to detect a small word beach, which is engraved on the coconuts. So, in addition to that, it's also able to detect animals in pictures, as well as recognize if there are documents stored in the gallery. And what the attackers do, they take all those tags and they send them to the C2 server for further analysis. And in my opinion, this is very impressive because it's actually the first time we see threat actors use machine learning to analyze exfiltrated data.
So what we have to say for the end? Please collect and also check the logs, network logs, at home. It's really easy to do, actually, if you just Google how to do that. And you should do that at home, and you also should do that at work. And the security through obscurity doesn't work, like, because everything secret at the end becomes known. And if you develop such advanced hardware-based memory protections that make exploitation really hard, of course you shouldn't have the easy ways to completely bypass them. And also, we expect like how the adoption grows for the machine learning technologies and AI technologies, like when all of our devices will be supporting these technologies, the malware also will take a usage of these technologies. And with that, they will get a really easy way to get all information about you with the help of machine learning. They will just have to ask, like, what the machine learning on your device knows about you. And of course, we should prepare for that and come up with solutions for that. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you, hey guys. So this is what you get when you attack iPhones from researchers. Thank you, Boris Lauren, Leonid Bezvesenko.
I think your microphone
is not
working.
I have a couple of questions. Sorry for the microphone. Where is it? Oh, it's not working.
Yeah, now it's working. Okay, cut. This is what happens when you hack these iPhones from these researchers. We have a couple of questions, a couple of time left, a couple of minutes. I go to number two. Is that okay? Yes, please.
Thank you for the great talk. So what do you recommend for private owners of Apple devices, how to check quickly if one is a victim of such an attack?
So we developed a special utility that anyone can check the device for indicators of compromise. So actually, we were not the only target for this attack. We know about a couple of victims all around the world and also here in Europe. So please go to SecureList. We have a special tool. It's called Triangle Check. Just download it, get your backup, and use this Python script to check your backup.
Yes, it's open sourced, and you can just make a backup yourself, check the Python code, run it, and check the device.
Thank you very much.
Good. Signal Angel, yes?
Yes, so the internet is like burning for your talk. Huge, huge thanks. One question here is, of course, about the attribution. So what are your theories about this? What can you share?
We never speculate about attribution if we don't have very strong evidences. Unfortunately, in this case, we don't have such evidences. So we do not do any speculation. Like, it's our motto. We never do any speculation when we don't know for sure.
Number one. Next question.
Thank you very much for the amazing talk, because it was also really interesting to observe how you do it, and you shared it, and this is really nice. Thanks a lot. And I have a short question, which is kind of related to the first one, but for a user who, let's say, cannot run scripts or doesn't know like about programming, are there any ways that they can just visually detect that their phone is behaving strange from your experience and kind of know that something is wrong, like if someone is not technical, for example?
I think, thank you for the question. I think all evidence is hidden. So the only one option to do a backup and try to find the indicators we already talk about.
Yes. So visibly it's not.
So with iOS devices, unfortunately, because it's closed system, there is no easy way to find out if your device was compromised with a very sophisticated attacker. If you use it, your device, it doesn't show any signs that it's compromised. So malware just runs here in the background, and it feels very good. So the only way to find such sophisticated attack is just use either network logs or get backup and try to see maybe something looks suspicious.
Okay, we have a question here at number two.
I have a question regarding the mitigation of the magic MMIO registers. So is that enforced by hardware or by PPL microkernel? For example, if you have a PPL bypass and can map arbitrary physical memory, can you still write to these registers and then patch the kernel?
So the idea, what Apple did is that they have special code in the kernel. So it's like PMAP, I believe it's PMAP function. So basically, it just checks if it's allowed to map something from these locked regions. So the main idea is that attackers should not use something in these regions to bypass PPL. But if attackers already have PPL, probably they can take a usage of it and use it for KTRR bypass, maybe. I believe that's some areas that deserves more closer inspection.
Thank you.
OK, number one.
First of all, a very great talk. I wanted to ask if this is still applicable on A17 or not. Like, is it patched?
All vulnerabilities that we talked about today were patched in the latest vulnerability was patched in iOS 16.6. So we waited a half of year to make sure that all the devices like are safe. So half years for everyone to update. So if everyone updated, you are totally safe from all what we talked about today. But if you, for example, want to jailbreak your phone, something, I believe other researchers will be able to use something from this to create jailbreaks.
No, I was specifically asking about the MMIO registers, if they are completely gone or not.
This mitigation was released in iOS 16.6. It was before iOS 17.
Okay, number two.
Thanks for the presentation. How long did it take you for the entire research from detecting the moment you've seen it to the moment that you've contacted Apple about everything?
So how long?
I think it was a half a year and more than half a year.
Yeah, half a year.
Okay, thank you.
Number four there in the back. Sorry that I missed you.
Thank you for the great talk. I have a quick question. Your API showed that there was a possibility to turn on ad tracking again. Did you find any suspicious traffic for ad tracking that the iPhone did?
So about ad tracking, we are not sure why they do it. Well, we have some weird theories, like maybe they will deliver some other exploits through this ad tracking stuff. But there are no evidence of it, and we do not know why they would need this information. Why would they need to enable ad tracking? That's a mystery.
I actually think that's like why they have like these two chains that actually looks like two different things that put together is that like their system is actually like it's mostly focused on infection of victims through web exploits. But they at some point needed this zero-click capability, so it was easy to them to just put these two systems together, then to spend time on developing or making a little adjustment to it. So I believe that like their main focus is to infect the devices through web, maybe with the help of this ad tracking.
Thank you.
Okay, there is some question from outer world. Yes, Signal.
Yes, you hinted at it that you saw kind of like the way forwards to Mac exploits here. So have you seen any evidence about this?
Well, about Mac exploits, apart from this PSP stuff, there are like more signs that it's also available on macOS. Like in the backdoor, there is a string like populate config with strings macOS only. So there are a lot of strings that hint at the presence of macOS, but we haven't seen an exploit on macOS. Well, but there are a lot of evidence in code which suggests towards it.
Yeah, I also will add that in the code of exploits, I also have I saw some things that point to that they have some separate build for macOS exploits. So like the same vulnerabilities, all of that, but for macOS.
Good.
Follow up. How much distance would you need to kind of like bridge between the iOS and the macOS exploit? A theoretical one.
If we are talking about Apple Silicon based Mac devices, basically exploitation is the same. Like, but iPhones are more secure because PPL, this hardware-based memory protection, are not implemented for macOS devices. there by design, it's possible to inject malicious code to other processes.
We have a little bit more time left, number two.
First of all, great talk. I wanted to ask how this exploit can be used persistent. So is it maybe possible to install this exploit persistently, so even if you reset your iPhone, restore a backup, it's still persisting?
Yes, yes, good question.
Yes, because of the iOS system, there is no way to persist on the system. And this exploit also didn't use stuff. So after the rebooting, the attackers need to again infect the device.
Okay, thank you.
Number one.
Hi, thanks for the talk. My question is, a recent iOS version introduced a security feature, which is a lockdown mode. So I was wondering if any parts of the exploit chain are mitigated by lockdown mode, and if so, which ones?
Actually, this is something that I'm not sure about, because it's something that worth a deeper look. I know that lockdown blocks some specific like functions, but I believe that like these syscalls, because they're like core system syscalls used by all the processes and everything, it's possible to execute them from the web container, from Sassavari and so on. I believe most likely lockdown doesn't block this kind of attack chain.
But in case we are talking about malicious attachment, it might be help with blocking the download.
Yeah, but that's something.
Didn't check for sure.
Yeah, we didn't check something to instigate.
Thank you.
I take one last question from number two here. Yes, sorry.
Hi, guys. Thank you for the talk. So I just want to ask, is there any other trigger for the uninstall for the APT beside the event log reading?
Oh. Well, you can get it uninstalled in many ways. Like you can like run the exploits from another phone, and the attackers will suspect something, and they will uninstall it. Then you can run it from a jailbreak phone, which is also suspicious. Like you do a suspicious thing, and you immediately can get no infection at all. That's what happens with APTs.
I mean, more particular ones beside the classical environment scan.
Yeah, without the trigger that we only have seen, it was stopping during the system walks, event walks recordings, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, this is what happens when you hack these iPhones from these gentlemen. Thank you, Leonid Bezvershenko, Boris Larin, and Georgi Kukherin for this fantastic story. Thank you.